A very anxious potato survives the first day of school, also a thunderstorm, and a visit to the doctor's office. A local author shares the journey in his new children's book, and we hear from a school social worker on the front lines, dealing with stress and depression, and how parents can calm the fears of their children. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, my guests look at the issue of childhood anxiety, from the common fears to the crippling dread that can lead to serious mental issues. Andy Oram is a new dad and author of The Very Anxious Potato, and Katie Omohundro is a youth first social worker at Tompkins Middle School in Evansville. And we learn that anxiety can be contagious. Children are watching and listening to how adults are reacting to COVID-19. 2 Main Street is next. From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Feeling anxious and depressed, we can all relate during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's tough enough for adults to deal with the emotional roller coaster of life, even tougher for some children. Fears and worries are typical in children, but persistent and extreme forms of sadness should not be ignored. So how do parents and caregivers start the conversation with children about their mental health? Andy Oram is a new dad and wellness advocate who has written a children's book to deal with these issues of dread, panic, and stress. The book is The Very Anxious Potato. So Andy Oram, welcome to 2 Main Street. So why did you choose a potato for your main character, Andy?
Well, I was just at work talking with some people, and somebody had mentioned that they felt like an anxious potato. That phrase came out, and I was like, wow, that is an excellent title for a children's book. I think I'm going to run with this.
I don't think I've ever heard that phrase before, an anxious potato. Why would a potato be anxious? I don't know.
That's a good question, but this potato in this book happens to be anxious, so.
And the potato is named Lyra. Why is the potato named Lyra, Andy?
The potato is actually named after my daughter. My daughter's name's Lyra, and so the book's a little bit of a tribute to her. I wanted to do something special for her that she can grow up with and, you know, have something.
Now, the illustrator who brings Lyra's story to life is a Princeton native. You're also a Princeton native. Tell us about the illustrator.
Yes, Tori Richardson. We're in the same friends group, so she's an acquaintance of mine, and she does a webcomic that she writes, and also a lot of other artsy stuff. That's part of her real job as an artist. So I got the idea down. I wrote the script, and I sent it over to her, and I asked her if she'd want to help out and get on this project. And she got really excited about it, and that's how we got in touch. So I already knew her, so I was lucky on finding such a talented artist to help with this book.
Now, Lyra, she's this, how old do you think this potato is?
This potato's kindergarten aged. The first day of school is one of the scenes in the book. So, two to six, well, not two, but, mm-hmm. Probably about four or five. I don't know when kids go to kindergarten.
So what's the first adventure? Let's open the book here.
Yeah.
And let's see what Lyra's first adventure is here, Andy.
Yeah. The book starts out with a storm, just to set the scene. Starts out with a thunderstorm. I know a lot of kids have a lot of fears with thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. So we start out with that. Just to kind of set the scene and set the rhythm of the book. And then after that, we go to school.
Looks like her classmates are also vegetables.
Yes. Everyone is they're all vegetable-based vegetable-based characters throughout the book, with names like Brock Broccoli or Katie Carrot, just to keep it, a little bit of rhyming in there. But
so Lyra, does she ever smile? Looks like she's always got a frown there.
She does smile. There are a few things where she smiles. She'll feel anxious, and then sometimes it'll either be another character that helps her out of it, or she'll pick a value judgment to be brave instead of anxious, and that gets her to smile.
So why did you want to do this book?
Well, I've always been a little bit of a writer. I actually, when I was 9 years old, In my house, I had a biweekly newspaper that I put out to friends and family. That was about one page, and I was 8 or 9 years old when I did that. And I also wrote at that time three short stories that are kind of a trilogy, I guess. That makes it sound way more grand scale than it is for a 9-year-old, but they were The Week I Was. The first one was The Week I Was the Principal, The Week I Went to Mars, and The Week I Went Back in Time. The latter ones reference the earlier ones, and I've always really just been interested in writing. In high school, I was in newspaper and yearbook. I really enjoyed that. And then really all the way through Hanover College, where I went to school at, I was a sociology major, so I've written my fair share of papers. Mm-hmm. So writing's just something I've always enjoyed, and I have anxiety and depression at times, and I just felt like the times that we're in right now, this was just a good thing to put out there, and hopefully I just wanted to, you know, even if I could help one or two kids get over some anxiety, I think that's well worth the effort to go into this book.
Well, let's go back to your visit to Mars. That kind of fascinates me. What was that all about?
Well, it's been a while since I've read it, but I believe it was, the main character got on board or got chosen to go to space, and something went wrong, and they ended up on Mars, and they fought aliens, and just the crazy wild adventure that escalated to saving a meteor crashing into Earth at the end. So it was definitely a very more fantastical setting than this potato book by far.
Well, let's learn more about Andy Oram. We establish that you're a Princeton, Indiana native, so you went to Princeton Community High School, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And I understand you were a track star there, Andy.
I was. I did run track all 3 years, sophomore year and up, I ran track there. Bill Niederhaus was our coach. He's a good guy, excellent coach. He still coaches out there. You know, shout out to Bill. But track really helped me out a lot. I think that really brought me out of my shell in high school, and being involved in that and being in a supportive environment and being able to succeed, that definitely helps out when you're good at something. You know, you get a little bit more motivated in it and you build confidence. And I think that really helped me out a lot going through high school.
Were you a hurdler?
Yes, I ran the hurdles. Really the 400 and down, the open four, 300 hurdles, 110 hurdles, 4x4, 200, just, you know, the shorter sprints.
Did you run track at Hanover?
Yes, I did. I did. I got a scholarship to run at Hanover, which I'm very thankful about. And I had a really good career at Hanover. I actually left with 9 school records. So I had a pretty successful career. I was in a good system, really supportive again. And that was really fun, times through Hanover. I was also involved in, I was in the Sigma Chi fraternity there. So I had a lot going on, but yeah, those were good times.
Did you go to Clifty Falls State Park?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've ran through Clifty a lot. We've been to Clifty a lot. Clifty, I mean, it's a 5-minute drive from Hanover's campus, so.
Well, Hanover College, I mean, it's really an idyllic place right along the Ohio River, kind of up on a cliff. Got some great views there.
Yes.
And
the only spot where you can see two bends in the Ohio River is on what we call the point at Hanover.
Uh-huh. Well, anyway, you were, I understand, also an academic All-American.
In cross-country 1 year, the team was. Mm-hmm. Our team GPA was high enough.
Wonderful, wonderful. So. Well, so anyway, and you are right now, I guess are you considered a kind of a wellness advocate right now in your career? Or?
Yeah, I do. I've done a lot of health and wellness stuff throughout my career since Hanover. I've also done social work. I've kind of batted between the two. When I first got out of college, I worked for Ireland Home Based Services and did social work there. And then after that, I moved on to work for Progressive Health out at Toyota, and I did their health and wellness program for a little while. And I was on night shifts, and I didn't want to do nights anymore at one point. So I decided to fade back into social work, kind of where my heart took me, where I went into, I worked for the Department of Child Services for a time. It just wore down on me after a while. You see a lot of really hard stuff when you're in that field. A lot of abused kids, a lot of bad situations, and you get a real appreciation for the. I had a pretty good childhood. I was a single parent mom, but she did excellent. And after working at DCS, you get a real appreciation for good parenting and good upbringing, because you see a lot of really traumatic things. You know, getting those 3 a.m. calls where you have to go listen to, you know, 5-year-olds talk about things they shouldn't talk about. It's really hard and difficult. And it just wore on me after a while. And I just had to step away. It was just too much for me to deal with. And then I kind of worked in some gyms for a little while and floated around. I've been a personal trainer for about 10 years, and eventually I decided I wanted to go to nursing school because I felt like that was a pretty good in-between health and wellness and social work. So that's the track I'm on now. I work out at Deaconess as a patient care tech, and then this fall here I'll be going to UE for nursing.
Tell us about your child, Lyra.
Yes, yeah. Oh, she's wonderful. She's 9 months old. She's a joy. It's hard to explain the joy of having a child, especially to people that don't have children. I guess the best way to put it is she just gives me such a deep happiness that I don't get anywhere else. Just being around her, playing with her, watching her smile and grow, and it's really cool to see her. She'll wake up one day and it's like she unlocked a new skill. Like, oh, you can do this today now. That's really cool. We're almost where we can pull ourselves up and stand. We don't quite have one foot in front of the other yet, and don't quite have crawling down, but she's getting there. We're close.
And you told me that Lyra enjoys Sesame Street.
Oh, she loves Sesame Street. That's about in the last week or so, she has been into some Sesame Street. She loves Elmo. We'll be driving in the car, and if she, you know, cries a little bit in the car, we'll put on the Sesame Street theme, and she is just engaged.
Hey,
right there.
Right. That's a good plug for public television there, Sesame Street. Okay, now this is a self-published book. How do you go about publishing a book, Andy?
Well, you copyright it, and I actually went through Amazon. Amazon makes it pretty easy to self-publish your book. You just you get a program, you upload your manuscript, your pictures, you format it, and then you click submit, and as long as it fits in their standards, mm-hmm. they'll publish it. They give you an ISBN number, and then it's available on Amazon. So mm-hmm. I'm tied to Amazon going through them. They're the only ones I can sell my book through at this point. But yeah, it's not too hard of a process, but it was a really rewarding process going through it all. You learn a lot. You know, if I could start over, there's probably some things I would do different to make it easier on myself at the end. But, you know, you live, you learn. That's part of it. So the next book I do, I'm sure it'll be a little smoother from the get.
We're talking to Andy Oram. He's author of The Very Anxious Potato, a children's book that helps parents talk to their children about the fears and they may have and how to deal with them. So what else you got in the works then? You kind of hinted that you might work on another book.
I think the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to revamp the three stories I wrote when I was
really?
Nine. I think I'm going to go back. They need some heavy editing. 9-year-old me wasn't the best at English yet, I guess. So I think I'm going to retool those, and I think I'm going to release those. And I have a lot of ideas floating around about how I want to go about it. I think one idea I had that I think would be really cool is since it is a pretty bare bones story as of now. I thought it would be really cool to get other artists involved and maybe each artist do a page, have a common theme, like main character, boy in red hat. Everyone has the same base of what they're going on, and then kind of explore some different art styles throughout the book. I thought that might be a cool idea, but it's all really preliminary and still in the works. So it could, you know, very well end up where you know, either I ask Tori if she'd want to get on the project or find someone else to just do it all in the same thing. But I thought a celebration of art would be a cool thing to do. But I don't know. That's just an idea.
Now, when parents get a copy of The Very Anxious Potato and sit down with their children and go all through the book, what do you hope that they learn through this adventure with Lyra?
Well, my big hope for the book is as they go through it, the children can see that their anxieties aren't always as bad as maybe they seem to be. Like, you know, the first day of school, I mean, that makes everybody anxious. I remember in high school, I was terrified, like at lunch, I didn't know who to sit with, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, I think that showing through media a way that you can get over it helps out a lot. You know, being able to relate to a character or look up to something else can get you through it. And really, in the end of it, at the end of the book, I have a a couple questions that parents can kind of ask their kid about anxiety, and hopefully that it can open up conversations between their between kids and their parents on anxiety, to kind of help curb some of that anxious potato behavior as a child.
What are the questions? What are some of the?
Oh yeah,
yeah, let's go over some of those.
They're just four really basic questions, like I said, just to get the ball rolling. I'm not a licensed therapist, so you know, just do you ever feel scared, worried, or sad? What makes you feel this way? What situations make you feel anxious? And what are some ways that we can cope with these anxieties? And I think that if parents can talk to their kids and use this as a base, I think it can, you know, help kids grow up to be healthy, you know, emotionally mature young kid or, you know, adolescents and then adults. Because young kids, that's such a formative time. And like I said, working with DCS, you see what happens to kids when they don't have a supportive, caring environment at a young age and when these anxieties aren't addressed. And, you know, those morph and can turn into, you know, anger or substance abuse problems they get as they get older or this or that. And hopefully, you know, this book, I'd, you know, like I said, if I can just help one or two kids just have a better outcome through their parents discussing this with them more and just it being more on the radar, then I think I've done a service.
Now, The Very Anxious Potato, just recently out, available. Any response so far?
I've got a pretty good response. My my initial goal was I just wanted to sell 50 copies, and I've went past that. We just broke the 100 mark the other day, and it's been out for about a week. So I mean, mm-hmm. I'm really happy. I'm really excited about it. I've been running around trying to anyone that will listen to me. I've been trying to tell them about it. So.
Now, you talked about you had some depression in your childhood. Would you call that extreme, or was it just kind of your normal?
I'd say, through high school, middle school, I got picked on a little bit. So, you know, that never helps. And, you know, I had some problems with that. And then through high school, I just some standard social anxiety. I went to dances, but I would just sit on the side or, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't really outgoing. And as I had mentioned earlier, running track and gaining that confidence through that really helped me to come out of that shell. And probably the end of junior year, senior year, I was definitely a lot more outgoing. A lot of my anxiety problems, I think, really started after I graduated from college.
Really?
Yeah. Like I said, I was heavily involved in my fraternity, and I was heavily involved with track and field. And then I graduated.
And all that ended.
Yeah, and it's almost like two-thirds of my who I was as a person just disappeared overnight. And I think I really struggled with that for years. And it took me a while to, I think, pinpoint, you know, and I guess it took me a while to fill that void. And it was a tough time. I mean, I remember, you know, not being able to get out of bed and having to miss work. So it was really, you know, like calling into work because I just couldn't move. And, you know, I think that definitely at that point, you know, if you let it get that far, that's a problem.
Well, now you're a parent and you have to get up. And,
yes.
And
yeah.
Get going.
But yeah, no, I'm definitely in a much better place now than you know, when I was, you know, 22, 23, 24. I'm 30 now, so I've had some time to grow out of it. But, I still get anxious. I still get down on myself. It's hard to get out of your own head sometimes. But definitely with having a kid, it puts things a little bit more in perspective, I think, because it's not about you anymore. It's about them, and that helps.
Are you still a runner?
Yes. Yeah, I run the Evansville Half every year, so I train, you know, throughout the year every year. You know, got to get those miles in leading up to it. I learned that the hard way. The first year I did the Evansville Half, I did no training, and then I couldn't walk for about a week afterwards. So learned a valuable lesson about, you know, how to handle that kind of distance, because that's definitely not something I'm used to. 13 miles is brutal if you're not ready for it.
Well, there's a really very active running community in this area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, doing 5Ks, here, Princeton, or I always like to do the Watermelon Run. It's a 4-mile run in Owensville every year.
Yeah. Owensville. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a fun one. So I've always, you know, done 5Ks and ran, and you know, I think running's a good stress reliever. I know working out and running helps me a lot, you know, just keep a little bit more even keel with everything.
So you think there's definitely a relationship between physical activity and mental wellness?
Oh, 100%. 100%. It's, I think, you know, humans, we're made to be physically active. I don't think we're just made to sit behind a desk all day and slouch over, and, you know, it messes up our posture and bad ergonomics. And, you know, people should be able to squat down to pick something up, you know, really basic things like that even. But definitely, I mean, you know, a lot of people talk about going back to running, you know, getting a runner's high after a hard workout. I think that's definitely a real thing. I mean, you know, you go out and you really exhaust yourself, and it might hurt for a little bit in the time, but, you know, when you're done, you get that, and you're just, it's just all that stress just melts away. And it's hard to worry about stuff and or be angry or whatever emotions you're going through when you're just huffing and puffing, and, you know, your body's really working hard and you're feeling it. So I definitely think, you know, exercise can have a huge assistance on your mental health.
One of my interviewees in the past, it was Anne Audain. She's from New Zealand, and she was an Olympic runner, and she lives in Evansville now. And she gives me these stories about competing internationally and everything, and talks about the running community here and how she's involved in it. And, you know, you can be involved in your latter years, too. These people are still putting in the miles.
That's the great thing about running is, I mean, you can do it at any point. As long as you're smart with it, you have to listen to your body, obviously. Mm-hmm. Your first run isn't going to be 5 miles. But, yeah, I think running's a, you know, obviously I have a big passion for it. And, you know, I recommend it to anybody that's able to. Anything really just to get your heart rate up and get you breathing heavy. I know some people, you know, everybody wears their Fitbit and they count their 10,000 steps, but I'm a firm believer that 2,000 concentrated effort steps go a lot further than just 10,000 general steps, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, tell me about your family. And is your wife a runner?
My wife is not a runner, no. My wife, she went to Central. She's here from Evansville. She's born and raised here. She was a softball and soccer player. She does still work out. You know, we go to the gym together and lift. Not right now. We're going to wait till COVID gets over before we make it back into the gym, you know, especially with having a young kid. But she does not like running. So,
well, tell us about starting a family during the COVID-19 pandemic. What's that been like?
It's been pretty crazy. She was born in November, so that was just whenever Wuhan was just starting to see their rise in cases. So luckily, I was, you know, able to be there for, you know, the hospital stay and all that, because I know now they don't allow people in, you know, which it is what it is. I mean, it's the world we live in. But since then, it's definitely been a little nerve-wracking. I mean, you know, we can't just, like, take her to the store or, you know, take her to go play places, or, you know, you can't have as many people coming in and out of your house and things like that. So it just kind of locks it down a little bit, which is okay, because that means I get to spend more time with her, and my wife does. And, you know, me and my wife really like each other. So we can hang out at the house for a month, like when she was off work, or we were both off work for the time after the birth. And, you know, we don't get sick of each other. If we could just, we're ready for retirement where we can just sit around together. So it hasn't been as bad on us, but it's definitely tricky with everything going on. You really have to just watch everything a little closer. And myself and her, we both work in the medical field. She's a surgical tech. You know, coming home, making sure we take our shoes off. If we got anything on us that day, you know, you have to strip down outside, take your scrubs downstairs, and then go shower, kind of thing some days. So it just adds a little bit extra effort in, but it's not the worst.
You know, usually when you have a new arrival, a new baby, you want to show it off. Mm-hmm. I know in the old days, you go in a stroller and you go through the mall and everything. Everybody comes up and wants to touch the baby, you know, and play with its toes and everything and get close to it. And that doesn't happen now.
Oh, no, absolutely not. That was the first thing we got for her carrier, was a little sign that says, "Your germs are too big for me. Don't touch me." So,
now does the baby wear a mask?
No. Children under 2 aren't supposed to wear masks.
Well, okay. But she'll always be a pandemic baby.
She will be a pandemic baby, yes.
She will tell her grandchildren about that. She was born in 2019, but right in that pandemic period of time. So, again, this book, The Very Anxious Potato, takes us through some adventures of Lyra. She goes to school. She experiences a storm. Any other anxious moments for this potato?
Yes, not only going to school for the first day, but making new friends and then a doctor's appointment.
Tell us about the doctor's appointment.
Well, she gets picked up from school, and her dad says we have to go get a flu shot. And at that point in the book, that's, I guess, where her anxiety gets the worst. I try to mimic a panic attack as a very mild one. Nothing's traumatic in the book, but just, you know, using phrases with, you know, feeling a weight on her chest. And then eventually the doctor, she begins to cry, and, you know, her dad comforts her and gets her through it. But I know doctors are always really scary for kids, especially shots.
Now, is the doctor a vegetable?
Yes, the doctor is Dr. Katie Carrot.
Okay. Well, yeah, I want to hear more of the characters in the book. You know, we had the broccoli.
Yes, we have her. She makes a friend, Brock Broccoli. There's Dr. Katie Carrot. Her teacher is Mrs. Sweet Spud, a sweet potato.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully she's sweet. Yes.
those are all the characters in the book that actually have a name.
Okay. Now, understand that are you a track coach as well? Have you done that?
A couple years ago, I did help out with Princeton track quite a bit, coaching. Mm-hmm. I'd coached one full season with them, but with, you know, work and mm-hmm. going on things. At this point, you know, when you're younger, it's a little – schedule's not as fluid, I guess, trying to, you know – work and all that, and with track practice starting at, you know, 3:15, not a lot of jobs get out that early. But I did have one full year where I was able to coach. I did coach hurdles. I got a kid, one of my kids, Joe Bickler. He real smart, real hardworking kid. He worked himself all the way to state as a freshman in the 110 hurdles, which is very hard to do. Very hard to do. So I'm really proud of him, and I mean, I loved coaching. I can't wait till I can get back to it one day. I really look forward to it. So hopefully when I get out of school here in a few years, I'll be able to get back to that.
Wonder how track and field is going to be affected by COVID-19?
We'll see. I know, it's cross-country season now, so we'll see if that goes, but track will be more February, early training starts. A little after that, March, April, May is really the bulk of the season. So I guess we'll just have to see where we're at when we get to that point with COVID and how everything is. Hopefully we won't be spiking anymore and we'll be on the downward trend by then. And hopefully if we're on the downward trend, then we can get back to closer to normal life.
Now, one last pitch about The Very Anxious Potato. Is available on Amazon. Is that correct?
Yes. It's available on Amazon, digital and paperback.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some other books in the works.
Some other books in the works. We got things down the pipe that hopefully we'll get. I want to get a little further on making sure this one's all wrapped up, and then I'll set it on the back burner, and then we'll work on the next project. I've had a lot of fun doing all this.
Well, maybe there'll be a return of some of these characters in the book, too. There you go.
Possibly. A lot of people have asked me if there will be a sequel to this book, so maybe I will work on it. Enough people have asked me that it's got me thinking, so we'll see where
goes. There's some great names in there. You've done a great job with the doctor's name, of course. That's a really good one. Again, her name?
Dr. Katie Carrot.
Dr. Katie Carrot. I'll have to remember that anyway. Andy Oram, author of The Very Anxious Potato, available on Amazon. Andy Oram, former track star, still a runner, wellness advocate, hopefully a nurse someday.
Definitely. Yeah. I start UE here in 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks.
Any special part of nursing that you're interested in?
Well, I work on an oncology floor right now. I really enjoy working on the floor as a patient care tech. You get to see a lot of different things, a lot of, you know, surgeries and various things that we get to see up there. And I think that probably starting there is a good idea, I think, for a lot of new nurses, just to get that broad experience of mm-hmm. things. And then, you know, maybe find a specialization. Orthopedics is always something I've really liked to do. Maybe orthopedic surgery always interests me. Mm-hmm. You know,
what does a patient care tech do?
A nurse's aide.
Okay.
More or less, probably more people are a CNA. People are, you know, more familiar with those terms, but now we just, you know, do a lot of the direct patient care with them, you know, helping people to the bathroom, making sure that they're washed up and, you know, drains and this, that, and the other. We have a laundry list of things. We're generalists. Definitely.
Any special precautions with the COVID-19?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, masks, we're all masked up all day. Now we're, we also have to wear goggles all day or some kind of eye protection throughout the day. Our COVID units, though, are separate from the main floor. So if anybody does have it, they're in their own unit, own part of the hospital. So that way, you know, we keep the spread minimal. And those precautions are a lot more higher. Those are, you know, you're wearing a gown all day. You have a PAPR, which is basically almost like a space helmet that has airflow going out of it or into it to, you know, so that way. And then all the rooms are in negative airflow for precautions as well. And a lot more cleaning over there. You know, every time you walk out of a room, we got to clean the visors and the PAPRs and all that. So that's a lot more of a to-do working in those. And the people that work in those units day to day they're real champs. They got to wear a lot of equipment and they have a lot of policies that they got to follow, but they really do. You know, everyone out there does such a great job.
So. Well, they are really the heroes of this time. They really are. Then they go in there every day and have to do that. And, they're put themselves at risk as well.
Hey, that's part of the job, though.
That's right. That's right. Well, Andy Oram, best of luck to you and your nursing career and your writing career now as well.
Yes.
And good luck with the family. Say hi to Lyra for us. And she now has a book. And she's an infant, and she has a book and with a main character named after. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. I'll be ready for her to, you know, be a little bit more aware here in the next year or two and be able to read it. And I really look forward to that. It'll be cute.
Andy Oram, thanks for being my guest on 2 Main Street.
I appreciate it, David. Thank you.
Still to come, another look at dealing with childhood anxiety through the eyes of a school social worker. Katie Omohundro is a youth first social worker at Tompkins Middle School in Evansville. She shares advice on how to deal with a student's fears about returning to school during this COVID-19 pandemic and what parents can do to help ease the stress on their children and their own anxiety. Also, the importance of having a routine. And remember, anxiety can often be contagious. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and we're talking about childhood depression and anxiety and going back to school, especially during a pandemic. Well, that can really be traumatic for children already worried about being cared for and being safe. There's separation anxiety, afraid of being away from a parent or caregiver, phobias about certain items and situations, social anxiety about being with others at school and other places, general anxiety about worrying about the future and what will happen next. These children may have trouble sleeping, become angry, and experience sudden symptoms of maybe heart pounding, trouble breathing, feeling dizzy or sweating, basically a panic attack. So it's important for parents and teachers to understand what's going on and why. Helping us make sense of all of it and get these children the help they need is often the school social worker. Joining me now is Katie Omohundro, youth first social worker at Tompkins Middle School in Evansville. Hi, Katie.
Hey.
So anxiety and depression, do they naturally go together?
They can. They definitely can. Someone can have feelings of feeling down, but also being anxious as well. Not a good combination. But sometimes there's more of the anxiety. Sometimes it's more of the depression. Really varies.
So is it sadness and hopelessness?
Yeah, that's more of the depression. There can also be signs of just change in sleep, change in appetite. Those can be some of the changes more with depression, but anxiety can also have similar, you know, symptoms like that as well. Changes in mood and behaviors, and it can look a little different depending on the age. I'm in a middle school, so moods can be a little all over the place. So just if something seems different, that's a sign that there could be some things going on.
Of course, we're recording this as students are heading back to school after a long hiatus. They haven't been back since March. So there's also that usual kind of uneasiness and excitement about going back to school, but this school year is much different.
Absolutely. It's definitely different. Thankfully, I think our local schools have great plans in place, so that hopefully will ease some anxieties in people. I know some students don't really know all of what that means, but I know being in a middle school, we have some sixth graders coming in, so they don't know what to expect because they've never been, some have never even been in our building. So we've had, you know, virtual orientations and things like that to ease some worries there and answer some questions and being on site and available to help out in any way that we can.
Now, your role as a social worker, what does that entail?
So at my school, I can work with students if they're having any conflicts with other students. So that might be just kind of a random thing that comes up. Or there might be a student that I work with regularly. We've identified there's some anxiety going on or depression, some anger, maybe some challenges at home. And a parent or guardian would sign a consent form or a permission slip, basically, saying that they want me to work with their student regularly. And so we go over some different skills based on what their needs are and what their challenges are. So that's my main role in the school. We also provide groups and different programs in the school. So if I'm seeing a number of students are having some challenges with anxiety, I might say, hey, I'm going to do an anxiety group. So we'll meet as a small group, and that's obviously going to look very different this year. We'll have to social distance and things of that nature, and I'll have to get creative with, you know, the different groups that I do and activities that we do. But, you know, if we do that example of an anxiety group, we would work as a team on that. I also help out with school uniforms, and if a family needs resources outside of school, like having food or shelter, it really varies quite a bit.
So are you optimistic this is all going to work?
I am. I feel like we have to be. I know my attitude toward things is definitely going to affect those that I'm around, whether that be my own family. I have two young children that are going to be starting school actually tomorrow, on the 12th. And then I think also going into the building and being positive and optimistic, the kids are going to see that. Now, does this mean that I'm not worried and I have no anxieties? No, that's not true. Even when we're not in the middle of a pandemic, there's some anxieties with starting a new school year. But I think sitting down and saying what plans are in place, what is in my control, that's important. And the things that aren't in my control, I have to just let those things go, or else it could just really cycle and spin, and that's when anxieties can definitely get high.
What do you think? Anxiety can be contagious if these students see their parents really worried and their teachers worried, and they feel this tension, that's going to reflect on them.
Absolutely. So I kind of have an unspoken rule in my house. I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, so we really watch social media and just media in general in our house. So I want to stay informed, but we usually don't have the news on until after the kids go to bed, because there's so much on there that could be really overwhelming, especially for my kids and their age. So I think it's good to stay informed, but we also limit that based off of the age of our kids and their understanding. So if I'm really anxious about something, my kids and my students are going to be able to see that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think being honest about when we're worried about something is important, because then it shows our students and our children that, hey, it's okay that I feel this way. And it's going to open that door for communication about that. But I think, you know, we don't have to tell them every little detail about things, but I think it's good to let them know what's going to happen. They're going to know things are different. We haven't been in school for 5 months. We're all wearing masks. It's very different. So practicing those things ahead of time can really reduce that anxiety.
My guest is Katie Omohundro. She's a Youth First social worker at Tompkins Middle School in Evansville. So, Katie, okay, let's say you're at the job site and the school's open, kids are wandering around. So what are some of the warning signs that you see among children that get your attention?
I call this my spidey sense. So for me personally, you know, I'm in the hallways. I try to be in the hallways as much as I can, because you can really see a lot just watching kids interact with each other. So seeing that and just paying attention to those things can really go a long way. But as a parent, if something just seems off, it's really easy to get busy. And I know for my 7-year-old at least, or even for middle school kids, they're really good at kind of brushing things off, especially in middle school. They kind of have this love me, don't love me thing, where it's like, okay, they want this time to themselves. They're not really wanting to do anything with me right now. And it can be easy to say, okay, that's good because I've got stuff I've got to do. But I think it's always great to set some time aside where there are no devices, no distractions. And for my family, it's dinner time. We always eat at the table, you know, unless there's something random going on, you know, life happens. But we sit at the table, we don't have any electronic devices, no phones, and we just eat and have conversation. And that can be an insight into what's on their mind. We usually say, what's your high and low of the day? What's something good that happened? What's something that was maybe challenging? And as parents, we share that about ourselves as well, because then it normalizes those conversations and saying, it's okay to have a bad day. I felt really anxious about this. And we could even brainstorm as a family, well, what are we going to do about that?
I think you hit on a couple of important points there. The importance of routine.
Absolutely.
And the importance of good nutrition and exercise. These are basics.
Yes. Yeah. And they're also, you know, school starting. For some, it already has started, but now's a good time to start to get into those routines so that kids know what the expectation is. They really thrive on that. And as much as there could be pushback on that, they really thrive on the knowing what to expect, because that in itself lowers anxieties. But there are a couple of different kind of umbrella ideas of ways to reduce anxiety. So some could be more of a attention centered technique. So that could be more of the meditation, visualization, breathing. Now, I used to be one of those people that would kind of laugh at the whole breathing thing, because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, everybody breathes, but it's truly deep, mindful breathing. And there are tons of things online to show how to do that and what that looks like. But ways to reduce those anxieties, too, is like that expressive, creative strategies, just channeling that anxiety in a different way. So an art project, it's just some physical movement, different arts and project type things.
Well, it sounds like this works for not only children, but also adults.
Oh, absolutely. I've noticed that I've done that myself, you know, being off work, you know, since I'm in a school, I've been off for the last 5 months, and I've done a few art projects and it really has helped.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if children are suffering from anxiety and depression, that certainly can affect their grades.
Absolutely. So that's something that I'll talk with a lot of students about is I do a lot of monitoring of grades. I've had a number of students will say, yeah, things are great, I'm doing okay. And I'll say, well, let's look at your grades. And I'll see that that's not necessarily the case based off of maybe previous discussions or something like that. So they know I'm going to look at them. But, you know, it's not a judging thing. It's kind of more, you know, where are your challenges? And anxiety, you know, we see a lot of test anxiety. So just without this pandemic stuff going on, there's some anxieties related to that. And it's a new year. Things are very different. So I'm expecting for students to be a little more anxious than usual anyway.
Well, coming up, we're going to talk about the Youth First program. Of course, Katie Omohundro is a Youth First social worker at Tompkins Middle School, and the role of the school corporation with the Youth First. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Katie Omohundro, Youth First social worker at Tompkins Middle School in Evansville. We've been talking about childhood anxiety and depression, especially with the new normal or abnormal at school with COVID-19. So besides anxiety among children, there's also probably plenty to go around with teachers and school staff as well. Would you agree?
Absolutely. So as Youth First social workers, we also provide some PD or personal development for teachers. And I'm going to assume that a lot of us will go in and talk more about anxiety with teachers, not just anxiety within the students, but the teachers themselves. You know, they've got a lot going on, and this is a very bizarre time and a new whole new thing for everybody. So Youth First social workers were there for staff as well. And I know I've had some staff reach out to me about some different things, and whether it's, you know, at school or their personal life. So Youth First is also there for school personnel as well.
So what is the feeling among your peers at Tompkins Middle School?
Yeah, I think it's a variety. You know, everybody is a team. I was reading over an email today from our principal, who is amazing, and she said she's very thankful that all staff is on board. We're all ready to go. I know that there are a number of people that it's just in their best interest that they've decided to retire early, but at our school, we're fully staffed. We're ready to go. Everybody's ready, and we're going to be starting pretty soon.
Well, tell the folks, if they're not familiar about the Youth First program in this community, what is its purpose?
Yeah, so Youth First provides master's level social workers in a variety of buildings throughout the tri-state area, throughout the different communities around Evansville. And we have, I'm a full-time social worker, so every time we're in the school building, I am there Monday through Friday, the entire time that students are there, and even after the students have left. And we provide therapeutic services in the school building. So what's great about that is we are where students are. So if there are any transportation challenges, we don't have that if the student's already at school. We see them where they are. It's a very unique situation in that I get to see students and their element and with their peers. And that's a pretty unique thing. So when they're talking about I'm having a challenge with this particular student, oftentimes I can bring that student in and talk with them and work out those issues. So hopefully it doesn't become an issue at home after everyone's gone to bed and they're on social media. So we could take care of a lot of things. And we could talk about school in general. This is a unique year, so I'm going to expect that it's going to be challenging academically because of that. So we can be there to help out in those ways, the anxiety, the depression. We do groups. We also have programs, some different programs that involve the family. So Youth First has programs that can go anywhere from pregnant mothers and all the way up to, you know, we have high school groups as well. So we've got a huge range. I love that we can work individually with students. I love that we can do small groups, and I love that we can do these larger programs that also include the family.
Can you share any success stories with us?
Yeah. So I had a student in middle school that she just kind of came to me randomly with some suicidal ideation. So she was thinking about ending her life, which is a big deal. So the great thing about being in the school is we're right there. So when this came up for her at school, I was right there to be able to work through that with her. So we talked about what was going on, created a safety plan, and that's how our relationship began. So I had close contact with family. They signed a consent form giving permission for me to work with their kiddo, and we just would meet regularly. I would try to pull during recess or lunch or some elective classes. I try really hard to work around those academics. But sometimes she was in a state where she was not able to learn. And so I was able to meet with her and hopefully in many instances get her to a place where she was ready to get back into the classroom. And she ended up, we were able to refer to outpatient therapy. So she was able to do therapy outside of school and also see me. So then we have great community partner relationships. So I worked really closely with her outpatient therapist, and she, you know, grew up to graduate and just was doing amazing, and has actually won some different Youth First awards. And she's been done a lot of work in talking to other people about mm-hmm. mental health, normalizing it, and being a champion for Youth First and what we're doing and spreading that word.
So, Katie Alejandro with Youth First, what advice would you have to parents, maybe to calm the fears of their children during this time?
Definitely start with expectations and talking about routine, what to expect, practicing wearing the masks. When kids know what to expect, that in itself is going to lower those anxieties. I know we talked a little bit about some different things with the breathing and getting in projects and getting involved. Those things can help out quite a bit. Journaling, even doing some self-monitoring. A lot of that's going to depend on the age. But I think getting our kids ready for what to expect as much as we can. There's so much that's unknown, and that's okay. And it's okay to let our kids know that. But the things that we do know, and there is a lot that we do know. We know when we're going to go to school. We know we're going to need to wear masks. We know we need to have a set time to go to bed. Those different routine things, that can ease those worries of, okay, this is our routine. This is what this is going to look like. That's step one.
I think also there's a problem there. We could maybe over-exaggerate this situation. I think maybe throw more fuel on the fire than's necessary. It sounds like it's manageable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can do this. We've got a plan in place. And I think letting our students and our children know that we have a plan. This is what we need to do. This is the way it's going to look. That can ease the worries, because then they're going to go in and know, okay, this is what I'm going to do first. I need to wear my mask and wash my hands. And it's the same message. I feel like everybody in the community has thrown out that message. It's great for us to wear a mask. It's great for us to social distance. And it's great for us to wash our hands. And breaking that down, that's age appropriate and what makes sense for the student, that's important too. Do they know what social distancing means? But once we have those things in line, that's going to cover us with that piece.
Well, you have a great positive attitude. I know that's very important for a social worker.
Definitely. Try.
You can't go into work glum every day. You have to be upbeat. Yeah. Well, you certainly are sharing that. Katie Omohundro with Youth First, social worker at Tompkins Middle School. Thanks for being my guest. Good luck to you and all of the school personnel facing these new challenges this very special school year. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Youth First partners with school districts in 10 Indiana counties with a team of 59 social workers. One of the most important messages from Youth First to parents is take time to listen. And non-critical listening lets children know you can be trusted and you are an ally on their team. The Youth First folks say always remember that while your child may not remember the advice you give, they will always remember how you made them feel in moments of need.